Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Protests over raising the retirement age escalate in France. 10,000 tons of garbage now piled up on the streets in Paris. Today on the show, we check in with the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO and a former congressman in Michigan on that state's battle to end right to work. Welcome to the Thursday, March 23rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with one of our longtime regulars, and that would be Bill Samuel, who heads the Government Affairs Department of the AFL-CIO, National AFL-CIO, website aflcio.org. And I urge you to go to that website and add your name to pass the PRO Act. It was recently reintroduced, in the Senate this time because they do not expect much to happen in the House of Representatives. And the whole idea here is to hold hearings and see how lawmakers stand on organizing. The Richard Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the first 100 days of the 118th Congress, and we'll do a comparison to the first 100 days when Joe Biden was elected 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago. And I could really cut to the chase on that. Nothing has really happened here in the first 100 days. Very divided Congress. Biden stepping on the gas with the new budget. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about labor committee hearings on union busting in Starbucks. Those are going to ramp up later this month. And the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, infrastructure. And also, if we have time, we'll touch on regulation. It's interesting, too, because so many industries have been deregulated over the years. I mean, this is like 40, 50 years now. I remember when they deregulated the trucking industry, the airline industry, and we're seeing the results of that, especially with that train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, and there have been a number of train derailments since. Look at the banking situation. All that is at the forefront right now. I'm sure Bill will talk about that as well, and also maybe get an indication when the hearings begin for Julie Sue, who is Biden's pick to be the next Secretary of Labor because Marty Walsh decided to move on to another job. Andy Levin will be joining us later in the show to talk about right to work in Michigan. And just to give you an update on that situation, there have been committee hearings between the House and the Senate. And this is in the State House in Michigan, in Lansing, to craft the bills so they resemble each other. It passed in the House, then in the Senate. They have to mirror the two, and then the governor says she will sign it. So that's where we are. It's going to take a while before it becomes law. That's another story. In fact, we're going to line up with Ron Bieber in a couple of weeks. Ron heads the Michigan State Labor Federation. But Andy is a lifelong Michigan resident, served in Congress there from 2019 to 2023, representing that state's 9th district. And he was in Snyder's cabinet. Now, Rick Snyder, was the governor who put forth right to work in Michigan. We're going back to 2011, 2012. And this is a governor who said, well, I really don't want to go in that direction, but his lawmakers kind of pushed him there. And then in the middle of the night, he signed the legislation, and we've had right to work in Michigan, which surprised a whole lot of people. Well, Andy left that position, and he was one of the many protesters trying to say, you know what, right to work is not the way to go, especially in Michigan. It's not good for any state, but Michigan, I mean, think of that, home of the auto workers. Very, very union-friendly state. Well, Andy is the right guy to bring to the table. He spent many years helping workers organize better, bargain for a better life For 5 years, he worked with the Service Employees International Union, then with the UAW Health and Safety Department. 11 years as Assistant Director of Organizing for the National AFL-CIO. And right now, he is what they call a Distinguished Senior Fellow with the Center for American Progress. Do check out that website, AmericanProgress.org. This is an independent, nonpartisan policy institute that is dedicated to improving the lives of all Americans through bold, progressive ideas, as well as strong leadership. And what they do, they challenge the media to cover these issues. And it's so important, like Right to Work. This is a good example. I know the Washington Post picked up on this, but this is a major story in America. This is the first time in like 60 years that something like this has happened. So Andy Levin will be joining us as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. What's happening in our world of labor? Well, let's find out. This segment on the program is brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. More protests and strikes spreading across France, all because of what the president wants to do, raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Get this, uncollected rubbish, 10,000 tons of waste has piled up over half of Paris. Many say the political system is collapsing, all because of President Macron's decision to use executive powers to push through an unpopular rise in the pension age to 64 without a vote of parliament. The protests intensified on Tuesday after the government narrowly survived a no-confidence vote. Over several nights of demonstrations, there have been more than 1,500 protests in various cities, including Marseille, Lyon, and Paris. Roadblocks have been put up. There's been protests on the dock. University buildings have been barricaded. Train track invasions at various stations. Protests at refineries. Electricity blackouts because of strikers. One trade unionist by the name of Celine said everybody's joining in. The government is afraid of more and more young people taking part. The French president is facing his biggest ever domestic political crisis less than a year after his re-election. That was a tough one, too. A protest movement and on and off strikes against his unpopular pension changes at one point getting 1.28 million people out to protest in the street. On Monday, the government survived a no-confidence vote, but only by 9 votes. Lawyers and magistrates' unions have criticized the government over the policing of street protests, and they've accused officers of making arbitrary arrests, including medics, students, and trade unionists, later released without any charges. In fact, the police watchdog is investigating allegations that 4 young women in one city were sexually assaulted during police controls at a demonstration that happened last week. Yeah, it's pretty messy. I've been watching some of the video that's going on there, but wow, that president's got a lot to deal with right now. Good news here for eBay-owned TCG player. These are what they call authentication center workers, and they won their union election earlier this month, and they'll be represented by the Communication Workers of America, Local 1123. TCG Player is one of the largest online marketplaces for verification services, card games, comics, collectible trading cards. It was acquired by eBay in last November. The workers are the first group of eBay workers to win union representation in the United States. How about that? On the next business day, get this, TCG Player Management fired Iris St. Lucie, an overnight team member and union organizer. Retaliation and union busting, not new, for TCG player management, which committed multiple labor law violations during the campaign. Got a comment here from St. Lucie. Throughout our union campaign, management has waged a ruthless intimidation campaign to stop us from joining our union, including holding mandatory meetings with anti-union propaganda and creating a culture of fear among employees. They want to make an example of this, but this egregious action only reveals how terrified TCG Player and eBay are of our collective power. Boy, that's one to watch. Wow. Bandcamp United, a union representing workers across all departments at Bandcamp, announced last week that it's organizing a union with the office and professional employees. Workers are calling on Bandcamp and Epic Games leadership to grant the union a fair and timely election. They are organizing for fair economic conditions across all departments, and they want a voice at work. We have another story regarding the office employees. After 5 months of talks, OPEIU, again, that's the Office of Professional Employees, their members at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, have struck a new labor agreement. Union members representing 152 people in administrative services, art services, specialists, building services voted 95% in favor of ratifying a new contract. It goes for 2.5 years. It's retroactive to January 1. Dustin Stoik is a steward. He said, "Our membership's really happy. We felt really respected and heard, I think, throughout the process. It was a good one. Big win was the wage increase. Members at the Minneapolis Institute of Art will receive a $4 per hour raise over the next 16 months. That includes a $1 per hour increase, retroactive to January 1, $1.50 per hour increase starting in July, and $1.50 per hour in July of 2024. So congratulations to the members of the Minneapolis Institute of Art. 5 months of negotiations certainly paid off there. All right, quick break. Bill Samuel on behalf of the Labor Federation coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Bill Samuel, I'm going to do a shout out here for the New York City Central Labor Council. We had Vince Alvarez on the show on Monday. And one of the things we did not get into is the ceremony that they are doing tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 112th anniversary of the 1911 Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire, one of the pivotal events in U.S. history and a turning point in labor's struggle to achieve fair wages, dignity at work, safe working conditions. There's a lot posted on various sites about what happened there in 1911. 146, mostly young, female immigrants inspired the union movement and helped to institute worker protections and fire safety laws. They lost their life that day. So the New York Central Labor Council will be holding a ceremony in person at Washington Place and Green Street to remember the dead and honor those involved in today's labor struggles. The ceremony will be at the site of the future Triangle Fire Memorial, which is currently being built and will be unveiled later this year. So we'll have more on that when the unveiling happens. Yeah, do check that out. 146 women. They pretty much jumped to their deaths, and they couldn't get out. They locked the doors there because they didn't want them to go to the bathroom. They said, well, you're taking too many bathroom breaks. So they couldn't get out. A horrible day. Horrible day, 1911. All right, let's go to our live line and join Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO, where he serves as Government Affairs Director. One of the things we want to talk about is the first 100 days of the new Congress. But you're telling me here off the air, little ceremony going on today for Marty Walsh at the Labor Federation. Is that right, Bill?
That's right. You know, he's one of our own. He was the president of Boston Building Trades. Then he became mayor of Boston and then secretary of labor down here in Washington under President Biden. He's leaving office, going to take over the Professional Hockey League Players Association. So we're having a sort of a celebration of his tenure at the Labor Department. He was a great labor secretary and wish him well. So we'll have a lot of labor leaders down from Boston and from internationals all over celebrating him tonight.
Yeah, he accomplished a whole lot in a short amount of time. Well, let me ask you while we're talking about that that position. I know his deputy, Julie Sue, is in the works here to become the next labor secretary. I know the president said that she should get the confirmation, but that could be difficult. What do we know about that? When are those hearings going to start?
You know, I think at the end of the day, she will be confirmed, but it won't be easy. The Democrats only have a one-vote cushion, as you know, in the Senate, 51-49. So it'll only take one or two Democrats to, you know, raise questions, to slow it down at the very least. I don't think the hearings are going to begin until probably sometime in April. Now, she's serving now as the acting secretary because she was a deputy under Marty Walsh. So she's already there, but she's obviously waiting to be confirmed by the Senate. We think she'll be successful, but there'll be opposition. The business community is lining up opposed to her. She was the labor secretary in California before she came here as the deputy secretary, which is the number two spot. And she was a tough enforcement-minded labor secretary in California. She went after misclassification and really tried to help workers get fairness on the job as a government enforcement official, which is exactly what she was supposed to do. But, of course, the business community doesn't like that, and they're lining up against her in Washington, spending money and organizing a campaign to try to defeat her. I think they'll fail, but it's going to take her a while to get those 51-plus votes.
Yeah, this will be one to watch, no doubt about it. And the more I read about her, the more respect I have for her. I think she speaks several languages, Harvard-educated, a true scholar, and a fighter. I know she did a lot of good things in California, so we'll see what happens here. Let's talk about Congress here and what's not happening, I guess. And if you can, perhaps you can compare and contrast the first 100 days of Joe Biden and the first 100 days of the 118th Congress?
118th Congress, yeah. Well, of course, when Biden came in, we were in the midst of the COVID pandemic, and very quickly Congress passed the American Rescue Plan, which really set the country on a much better course than it had been on in terms of making medical supplies available, vaccines, unemployment insurance, all kinds of programs that were helping workers who were, you know, many stuck at home, many going to work in unsafe conditions, and Biden took that on right away on day one. But I would also compare Kevin McCarthy, who, as you know, is now the speaker, took 15 ballots to become speaker, his first 100 days as speaker, to Nancy Pelosi's first 100 days. in 2007 when she became Speaker. In the first several weeks, she raised the minimum wage. She passed a Medicare negotiation bill. She passed an energy bill. She passed a bill lowering student debt. This is back when Nancy Pelosi took over. McCarthy has passed no significant legislation, and it's now 3 months in. They declared the, this is a Republican House, they declared the pandemic over without any medical evidence. They just, as a political matter, they decided to vote to declare the pandemic over. They voted to condemn socialism, very important matter for the House to take on. This is, again, something they did in their first few weeks. And they set up committees to investigate the Bidens, President Biden, his son, his deceased son's widow. They've really accomplished virtually nothing. They haven't taken on inflation, the climate crisis, student debt. They haven't passed a jobs bill. And as you know, in the last Congress, the House and Senate were very busy passing major pieces of legislation dealing with jobs and industrial policy. They've done none of that. So I'm not sure what to expect out of the House Republicans over the next 18 months that they're in the majority. We'll see what happens in 2024, but they've accomplished virtually nothing so far.
Now, Bill, let's dig a little deeper into this. Is this because there is the far right caucus there? Used to be the Tea Party, now it's the Freedom Caucus, and I don't know what they're calling themselves, actually. But they're basically holding him hostage right now in a lot of things?
Well, I think that's part of it. But I think it's more basic than that. They don't have an agenda. This is the anti-government party. I mean, I hate to say it, and it doesn't go for every single Republican, but the vast majority of House Republicans. They don't want to pass legislation. They don't want to invest in jobs and people and schools and health care and pensions. They want to tear things down. You just listen to them. They talk about crime. They talk about LGBTQ issues. They talk about school books. They've taken a kind of a bizarre turn in my, you know, I've been here a while, and this is, in my experience, this is a very strange class of House Republicans, 118th Congress. They may take up a bill next week to roll back key parts of the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, they didn't like the fact that the president passed really historic legislation dealing with climate and jobs. They may try to roll that back. But basically, this is a party that doesn't believe in governing, and of course that's their job, that's why we sent them there. And so they're conducting investigations, they're passing symbolic bills like I mentioned earlier, and that's essentially all they're doing right now.
I know one of the things they're upset with is the hiring of more IRS agents, and the Treasury Department is way behind on that anyway, and there's a lot of taxes that are probably not being collected because of that. You think they'll get their way on that, or can they do something like that?
I mean, this is the other thing. You know, they will at some point start passing bills, but the Senate isn't going to take them up. So they're engaged in these sort of symbolic fights. As you know, the Democrats control the Senate, at least by a vote, and the president's not going to sign bills that undoes his agenda. They're going to have to find ways to compromise with Democrats. I think Democrats are willing. I think they're willing to come to the table, but Republicans, at least in the House, you did mention McCarthy's very tenuous hold on his caucus. You know, he's in debt to Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and a few other the really extreme Republicans for providing the votes he finally got to become Speaker. So it is not easy for him to get majorities in his caucus for things. He's got to put together he can only lose four votes on any a floor vote, assuming he gets no Democrats. And it's very likely that on most votes he's going to lose some Republicans, either from the moderate wing, which is tiny, or the extreme wing, if he looks to form, you know, to work on some kind of compromises with the Democrats. So he has a tough job, there's no doubt about it, but it's his own doing. I mean, he sold his soul to the Freedom Caucus, as you mentioned, and now he needs their support on everything, and they're going to be a tough crowd to convince, and if he does, he'll get no Democratic support, and he may lose a half dozen moderates, and then he can't pass anything.
Wow.
So that's the future for Kevin McCarthy in this House of Representatives.
What a position to be in, my gosh. Yeah. All right, now, the president has introduced his budget. Maybe we could speak to that, maybe some of the components that you want to call attention to. And what do you see happening with this? Is the other party going to release their version of the budget? Where do we stand
on? Well, that's a good question. You know, again, they talk about the government spends too much, but they haven't offered their own budget. They sort of danced around it, talking about the fact that they want a balanced budget, they want to cut spending. But every time you try to pin them down on what they would cut, you know, they back away. Oh, they're not going to touch Social Security. They're not going to touch Medicare, some of them claim. They won't touch defense. They won't, you know, anything they consider popular, they claim. That's not what they mean when they say cut government. Well, they got to cut something. Food stamps, Medicaid, the Postal Service, the FBI, FEMA. You know, are they going to stop funding a disaster relief? They're kind of putting themselves in a box here. So they don't have their own budget. President's budget, on the other hand, did come out in March 9th, I believe he released it. And I have to say, I was really impressed with the president, because rather than backing down, you know, or backing off because the House is now in Republican hands, he put his foot on the gas. He is continuing along with his priorities, funding, for example, a big increase in Labor Department programs and worker protections, child care, education, all the things he promised last year, some of which he accomplished, some he didn't. He's back at it. Contrast that with President Clinton. You remember he came in 1994 after losing the House and said the era of big government is over. You know, he made big concessions to Republicans. Even President Obama backtracked a little bit when he lost the Congress in 2010. He lost the House, became Republican. He backed down a little bit. His budgets were much more modest. Not President Biden. It is full steam ahead, and you know, I think that's a good place to negotiate from. I think it's very clever of him to stick with his agenda and his plan and make the Republicans come to him, assuming they don't want to shut down the government. You know, there's going to have to be some deal, and he's starting out with a very strong hand, I think.
Well, he certainly called their bluff on Social Security and Medicare, because there were a number of very prominent Republicans that said that they wanted to slash those programs or sunset them so they would be revisited several years. And that seems to kind of faded away, hasn't it, right now?
That's right. Right. The Republicans running for re-election in the Senate, and this is, you know, the party apparatus, put out a document saying that they were going to sunset every government program every 5 years, which means if you've been paying in the Social Security for 30, 40 years and you're about to retire, well, you've got to depend on Congress to approve Social Security every 5 years, meaning they could decide not to. So all the money you put in and the retirement that you're expecting wouldn't necessarily be there if a future Congress decided to change that. So President Biden made an issue of that in the State of the Union. Republicans immediately backed down. Oh, we didn't mean Social Security and Medicare. We're talking about other government programs. Again, they won't specify which ones, because I think they're afraid that the public, by and large, supports government programs which help ordinary people, as they should. So I think the Republicans, again, I think they're backing themselves a little bit into a corner. Now they've said they won't vote to raise the debt ceiling, which is just really a bookkeeping matter, which commits the government to paying its bills, so creditors around the globe have confidence when they invest in the U.S. Now they're threatening not to increase the debt ceiling unless they get their way on these budget cuts, which they won't specify. So, I mean, I could go on. I just think the Republicans are really backing themselves into a corner.
Bill Samuel joining us in our live line today, longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce. He serves as Government Affairs Director, AFL-CIO.org for complete updates. Andy Levin will be joining us, former congressman from Michigan, going to talk about the repeal of right to work in that state. That's later in the show. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
from the Communication Workers of America, District 4. We are a labor union representing a vast array of workers in different industries, including the Association of Flight Attendants, Telecommunications, CWA Passenger Services, Public Health Care, and Education Workers, the IUE, CWA Industrial Division, the National Association of Broadcast Employees, the CWA News Guild, not to mention our growing digital sector, and many others. If you're interested in organizing your work group or learning more about what it means to be CWA strong, visit our website at www.cwad4.org. That's cwad4.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go back to Washington, rejoin Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO. All right, talk to me about these Labor Committee hearings. In fact, I believe Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, is going to be testifying, and it's all because Bernie Sanders kind of put him on put him on the spot here. Can you tell us what's going to happen here, Bill?
Yeah, he sure did. So Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont, is now the chair of the Senate Labor Committee. He just got that post in January, and he went right to work. One of his first hearings, if not his first hearing, was on organizing, worker organizing, and corporate union busting. And he invited three union leaders to testify and tell their side of the story. So President Shuler from the AFL-CIO, Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters, new president, and Mary Kay Henry, a longtime president of SEIU. And the three of them gave very powerful testimony about what it's like for workers who try to organize and the obstacles they face and the basically the law breaking of companies who make it very difficult, if not impossible, for workers to have a free choice to form a union. Bernie also said at that hearing that he had invited Howard Schultz, and he was prepared to subpoena him because Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, involved in hundreds of unfair labor practices, fired numerous workers, violated the National Labor Relations Act in countless ways. Bernie said, you got to come explain yourself. And it's the first time in my memory that a labor committee chair has demanded that a CEO who is a union buster come testify and answer questions. And Schultz said no. So Bernie, Senator Sanders, Chairman Sanders, said, we'll subpoena you. We'll compel your testimony. And at that point, Schultz backed down, and he's now scheduled to testify on March 28th. He's about to step down as CEO of Starbucks. This will be the second time he's done that. But he is going to answer questions, and it's going to be fascinating because I think the Democrats on that committee are going to line up and really demand answers about his behavior and how he thinks this is acceptable for a major corporate leader to so brazenly violate the rights of their workers.
And this is a good place to really promote the Protect the Right to Organize Act, actually the Richard L. Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. Now, it has been introduced, but in the Senate this time. Last time, in the last session, it passed in the House, didn't make it in the Senate. Am I correct in saying
that? That's right. It passed the House actually in the last two sessions, and it's been reintroduced in the 118th Congress in both House and Senate. The House... Every Democrat, just about, has co-sponsored the bill, everyone who co-sponsored it and voted for it last time, plus every new Democrat who was elected in November is a co-sponsor in the House. I think they're up to about 205, 206, something like that. They would need 218 to pass it. I'm not sure we're going to get there. We've even got a Republican in the House who's a sponsor. In the Senate, it's been reintroduced. We have every Democratic senator but three. as co-sponsors, the three who wouldn't co-sponsor it last time, Mark Warner from Virginia, Mark Kelly from Arizona, and Kirsten Sinema from Arizona. So the three of them are not yet co-sponsors. Senator Sanders, I think, intends to hold a hearing on the bill and mark it up and send it to the Senate floor, and then we're going to have to talk with the leadership and, you know, among our union leaders and decide, do we want to have a vote, knowing that it probably won't pass the House, and knowing that Republicans in the Senate will filibuster it. You still need 60 votes to, unfortunately, to pass regular legislation in the Senate. They haven't changed the filibuster rule as frequently as we've suggested that, to make it an actual majority vote to pass bills. That would be 51. And I think, by the way, I think we have 51 votes for the PRO Act if we could get the filibuster rule changed. So we'll talk about, you know, later this spring and summer whether or not and when to have a vote on in the Senate. But it's going to take until the next Congress to get probably the House to pass it for a third time and then send it to the president, assuming we have a Democratic president after 2024. By the way, President Biden, in his third State of the Union, called on Congress to pass the PRO Act.
Yep.
He's done it each year as president.
Yeah, he doesn't mince any words on that. He wants unions. He really does. He's 100% behind unions, and that is so refreshing, so refreshing.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Biden, we've got some good policy that happened in the first 2 years, and we got the infrastructure, the CHIPS, Inflation Reduction Act. You mentioned the rescue plan and all that stuff. Are we starting to see more things happening as a result of that policy?
I think so. I mean, you talk to the building trades, and they claim there are more, you know, jobs available and workers at work in the trades than ever. There's even the possibility of some shortages. And this is, you know, you think back to the pandemic when we had pretty significant numbers of unemployed workers in lots of fields. That's not the case now. People are going back to work because of the legislation that the president and last Congress adopted dealing with infrastructure. There's thousands of projects getting underway. Thousands of communities are seeing money come in for, you know, either with routine maintenance of highways and bridges or, you know, new projects. We're getting clean energy jobs underway in solar and wind and nuclear power plants. So there's lots of construction. Production will come next. These semiconductor factories are being built. One major investment in Ohio, as you know, 10,000 workers, I think, are going to be working on that Intel plant. Mm-hmm. And then we need to make sure that the production, once these plants open, is also union. And we're working with the administration to try to guarantee that. It's not automatic. You know, president talks about good union jobs, but you got to organize them, and you got to make sure companies aren't hiring union-busting law firms to prevent that from happening. So we're going to be busy at that over the next handful of years, making sure that the president's vision and our vision actually happens, and we see a lot of new union jobs created.
Yeah, that's what we want. Well, there's another topic, and that's deregulation that's happened over the years. I really kind of wanted to talk about it today, but I'm going to have to pass maybe to next month because you see a lot of people that were supporters of deregulation that are now saying because of what happened with that train derailment and various train derailments, the banking situation, well, maybe we need some more regulations here. But it's interesting how that dynamic has changed here because I have to make some time here for a dear friend of yours. You remember Andy Levin?
I sure do.
Congressman from Michigan, and you know the big story out of Michigan. We're really happy here. Bill, any thoughts on what happened in Michigan here? It's not a done deal yet, but we're very close to seeing the end of right to work there. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's a great reversal of a terrible policy, and it's the first time in decades that a state that had previously adopted a right to work measure actually has reversed themselves, and it's due to the turnout of voters in Michigan last November changing their legislature, keeping their Democratic governor in office, and deciding to repeal right to work. It'll be a great day when that bill is signed. We're looking forward to it. We've got a few more states to go, but we're really grateful that that's happening in Michigan.
Elections matter. They certainly do. All right, my friend, right. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org for complete updates. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Look forward to it. Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Levin talking about the repeal of right to work in the state of Michigan. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That's real simple. AWF Union Podcast. Make sure you get the word union there. And remember this, if you like a show, I know we've been doing some pretty darn good shows, at least in my opinion, please share that show. We count all the downloads. Our sponsors like to know how many downloads we're getting so we can get more sponsors and grow the show. We want to grow the show in 2023, 30 years of America's Workforce. We appreciate you listening to this program. Let's go to line number two right now from Washington, Andy Levin joining us. Andy is now a distinguished senior fellow with the American Center of Progress, the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org is their website. He's a former congressman. Served in Michigan's 9th district, and he saw what happened in Michigan about a decade ago when that state went right to work. And I remember doing the show back then. I was like, wait a minute, right to work in the state of Michigan, home of the United Auto Workers, a lot of union brothers and sisters. He was part of the protest. Andy, let's go back to that time. You were one of the many protesters when Snyder decided in the middle of the night to go right to work. Is that right?
That's right, Ed. He had said right to freeload, as I call it, was not part of his agenda, quote unquote. But then he signed it. They passed it in the middle of the night. And we did have incredible protests out there. I remember super creative signs. For example, there were a couple of women who had a sign that said, you know, it's bad when the librarians come out to protest. It was very creative, very great, but they did it anyway. And they jammed this down the throat of the state of Michigan, where, as you say, there's incredible, not only a tradition going back to, you know, the sit down strikes and Flint and the Battle of the Overpass, when Walter Reuther and others were bloodied by, you know, Pinkerton kind of guards at Ford when they were forming the UAW, and it was central to the creation of the CIO and the whole labor movement of the country in the 30s and 40s that built the middle class. There's also just a real spirit of solidarity among workers in Michigan. So it was a bitter, bitter pill, and here we are about a decade later, the first state in 60 years to overturn right to freeload laws in our state. Finally, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not done, but it's very close. This week on Tuesday, there's a bill in the House, there's a bill in the Senate, and they're not identical once they, you know, get the language correct. The governor there, Gretchen Whitmer, said she's going to sign it. This is kind of interesting. I don't know what you know about this, but apparently they tied like an appropriations part to the bill, which kind of makes it like veto proof. Do you know anything about that? I mean, I got to salute the Democrats on that one. That's pretty clever. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yes. What it makes it is referendum proof. So as you say, the status of it is that just now both houses of our legislature have passed the same bill. They each passed a little bit of a different bill, or a set of bills, and now they've each passed the same bill to overturn right to freeload in the private sector, overturn it in the public sector, even though Janice Vyasmi, the Supreme Court decision, imposes it on the public sector. But in the event that that changes with the future Supreme Court, our state law will be in good shape. Mm-hmm. And also restoring prevailing wage in Michigan. But here's the thing about your question. Michigan is one of just a couple states where you can not only pass a ballot initiative on a lot of things, but that a legislature can take a proposed ballot initiative and pass it in a way that's veto-proof. So like if you had, as we did until recently, a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor, and the governor would veto some terrible thing that the legislature would do, they can pass it anyway in a way, if there's enough signatures to get it on the ballot, even if it's not popular with most people, they can pass it. Well, so what the legislature did here is tied an appropriation to the bill to end right to freeload, so-called right to work, and therefore it cannot be passed via, it cannot be overturned via a referendum like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did.
I got to start using that. I use right to work for less. But I like that one, the right to freeload, because that's exactly what it is. You know, let's talk about this. Before we do that, though, I have to point out again to our audience, Andy's got a great labor connection here. 5 years for the Service Employees International Union, UAW Health and Safety Department, 11 years as Assistant Director of Organizing for the AFL-CIO. In fact, we were talking to Bill Samuel. He worked with Bill for some time at the AFL-CIO back then. So it's a great labor history. And this whole thing about right to work is just baffling to me because the studies show it it doesn't help workers. What's the problem here? Is this just a great PR smear by people that hate unions? Is that what this is all about or what?
That's actually right. Plus, you have to throw in kind of like a toxic racism, because it's very much something that came out of the South from the Olin Foundation and these other very right-wing groups who not only wanted to crush unions, but they especially wanted to make sure, God forbid, black and white people didn't stick together in solidarity in a union. So the right to freeload idea is an idea to divide people and to weaken unions. It's, first of all, let's clear up how much it's not about someone's right to work or right to their job. The Supreme Court in the 1940s ruled that no one can ever be forced to join a union. So there's no requirement that anybody join a union. And then in the 70s, they ruled that the political spending of unions can't be charged to non-members. So the idea that they still say constantly to this day, the Right to Work Foundation and so forth, that people are forced to support organizations that disagree with them politically. Nope. The only thing that's allowed in non-right to work states is something very sensible, that everybody who benefits from a union contract helps pay their fair share to administer it. And the reason it's so essential, and it, you know, as you say, why these right to freeload laws are so absurd and why I call it right to freeload, is under federal law, every union has to represent and support all the people it covers equally, even if they never paid a penny of dues or fees. So if you and I both work at the same place for 15 years, 20 years, whatever, and you pay your dues every month, and I don't pay anything, the right freeload state, I don't even pay any fees. I never paid a dime. And then I get fired because I'm sleeping with the boss's daughter or some reason that's totally illegitimate. I can go to the union and say, you have to represent me. And even if it goes to arbitration and costs tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars for the union to advance my cause, they have to do it, even though I never paid any penny of my fair share to run the union. There's no organization that can survive like that.
Right.
There's no, you know, and that's the very purpose of it, to weaken unions, to weaken the working class people's ability to have their own organizations that effectively advance their interests, to bargain at their, you know, local facility, or to have representation across their whole company so that the workers have some voice in it. And so it's been a sham from the beginning, and it's great that Michigan is the first state in 60 years to repeal it.
One more question here, Andy. Do you think we might be starting a trend here? I know that might be a stretch, and again, I told this to Bill, elections matter. When you change that state house and you got the right people in office, good things can happen. And we've seen that with the Biden administration, all the good policy coming out of the White House. I'm wondering, 27 states, right to work, many of them, as you reference, in the South. But what's your take on it? This could be a good climate for that, right?
Yes. Well, so the American people are more pro-union than they've been. You know, the Gallup organization has polled the same question every year about what people think about unions. 70% of Americans are favorable towards unions, something like that, the highest in since 1965 or something. Young people are especially pro-union. We have the worst income and wealth inequality we've had in 100 years. And, you know, it's a time for people to be able to be free to form a union and run a union if they darn well please. And you see people doing it at Starbucks, at Trader Joe's, at REI, at Amazon, and they're having trouble getting contracts because our law is so bad. It basically doesn't require employers to sit down at the table and negotiate a reasonable contract. So that's another problem we have to tackle. But yeah, I think it could become something of a trend, you know? I mean, if these organizations actually cared about someone's right to work at a job, they would tackle the real reasons why any significant numbers of them lose their jobs, because they try to form a union. There's a lot of discrimination against workers because of that. Or what about race discrimination or religious discrimination? Or there are a lot of reasons where we have some laws on the books that to protect workers from discrimination. These right-to-work people don't help you for any of those actual reasons that people may have, you know, their job may be lost unfairly. So it's just a sham, and I hope the American people are waking up to it, not just in Michigan, but in other places, so we do start a trend. That would be terrific.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, I can see why you have become a distinguished senior fellow with the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. You know what? Let's keep in touch with this issue and more. I love that organization. I mean, it's a great organization, and I'm glad that you're a big part of it. So let's keep in touch on these issues down the road. Could we do that?
Absolutely, Ed. It's great to talk to you, and I'm very happy to be at the Center for American Progress, working with a lot of great colleagues to advance the interests of the working people of this country.
All right. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to check in with the AFL-CIO Deputy Director of Advocacy and Tom Conway, General President of the United Steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.